Hello, and welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. The first update I have is that I'm happy to announce that as a media sponsor, I've recently been informed that LQ is able to give away one full Ubuntu Live conference pass absolutely free of charge. There's currently a thread going on the main LinuxQuestions.org site, and to be eligible to win the conference pass, all you need to do is post in this thread saying how you are involved in the Ubuntu community and why you'd like to attend. One winner will be selected from that list on June 19th. The only thing I do ask is that if you do apply to be a winner, is that you can absolutely attend. I don't want the ticket to go to waste, and I'd like the first winner to be the actual winner, not have to go through a bunch of iterations. So to be make sure, Ubuntu Live is being held in Portland, Oregon, and is July 22nd through the 24th. Also during this time, you can win some great LQ merchandise, also free of charge. And to win, it's just as easy. All you have to do is make a post before June 14th. And we're going to randomly select three posts from when the contest started through when the contest closes, and three people will be selected to win anything they want from the Linux Questions merchandise store. Now, there are a couple rules. If you head over to the news forum at linuxquestions.org, you can see what the rules are there. But good luck to everyone. And just a reminder that I'll be attending the Linux Foundation Collaboration Summit, which is being held at Google and starts tomorrow. I'll actually be getting on a plane in a couple of hours. Now, on to the news. The first story I have is Linus on the GPL version 3. And Linus made a couple of interesting comments on the Linux kernel mailing list a few days ago regarding the GPL version 3, and here they are. Quote, I was impressed in the sense that it was a hell of a lot better than the disaster that were the earlier drafts. I still think GPL v2 is simply the better license. I consider dual licensing unlikely and technically quite hard, but at least possible in theory. I have yet to see any actual reasons for licensings under the GPL version 3, though. All I've heard are shrill voices about TiVoization, which I expressly think is okay, and panicked worries about the Novell Microsoft deal, which seems way overblown, and quite frankly, the argument seems to not so much be about the Novell deal as about an excuse to push GPL version 3. The second quote, by the way, if Sun really is going to release OpenSolaris under GPL version 3, that may be a good reason. I don't think the GPL version 3 is as good a license as V2, but on the other hand, I'm pragmatic, and if we can avoid having two kernels with two different licenses and the friction that that causes, I at least see the reason for GPL v3. As it is, I don't really see a reason at all. I personally doubt it will happen, but hey, I didn't really expect them to open source Java either, so it's not like I'm infallible in my predictions. End quote. And if you've been following this, you'll notice that Linus's opinion on the GPL version 3 has gotten slightly more positive with each draft, which I think is a good indicator that the Free Software Foundation really has been proactively listening and responding to criticisms and valid objections. Now, I'd also guess that the definitive edition of Apache license compatibility will lead to some additional adoption that may not have happened, and that's my guess as to why they added it at the end, was to fuel a little additional adoption. And Linus is pragmatic as usual in his above comment about OpenSolaris. If Sun does indeed release it under the GPL version 3, and Linux is able to follow, that would be a huge win for both, as there's really a ton of innovation on both sides that would finally be able to flow back and forth. Now, whether that will happen, of course, remains to be seen, but at least now it's a possibility, and that's a start. The next story I have is why multiple competing standards are a bad idea. And this is a good look at why multiple competing products using an open standard is good, but multiple competing standards that do almost the exact same thing is not. And this is a quote from the blog post. I guess one good result is that Microsoft has encouraged voting for OpenDocument, because that's the only logical thing it can do if it really believes that having many conflicting formats are a good thing. In a contrast, there's no reason that someone who wants a truly open single format needs to vote for OOXML. It's perfectly reasonable to reject OOXML on the grounds that it conflicts with an already existing ISO standard, being OpenDocument. If there's something that OOXML does that OpenDocument doesn't, it would be much easier to add that tweak to OpenDocument, because OpenDocument builds on existing standards while OOXML fails to do so. Microsoft is not a universal evil, and I praise them when they do good things. But encouraging multiple conflicting standards for the same area is not a good thing. In some sense, I don't care if MS XML or ODF become the format for Office documents, as long as the final specification is truly open. But the materials noted above lead me to believe that MS XML is not really open. It appears to be effectively controlled by one vendor, both in its current and future forms, as one obvious example. So MS XML isn't really an option, and we already have a nice working solution. What I want is a single document format that is fully open. What's that mean? C is open document and open standard. Yes, to see what the phrase open standard really means, and let's look at it in practice. Currently, I can edit text documents using the program Vim and don't even bother to ask if the other person uses Emacs or Notepad. Just by saying simple text format, we can exchange our files. Similarly, I can edit a GIF or a PNG without wondering what originally created the file or who will edit it next. That's generally true with other standards like HTML, HTTP, and TCP/IP. That's the beauty of open standards. Real open standards enable a thriving industry of competing products, allowing users to choose and re-choose between them. I want to see that beautiful sunlight in office suites as well. End quote. And if this is something that interests you, I recommend you read the entire blog post. It is a good one, and you can find a link to it on my blog. The next story I have is a patent lie. So it's great to see that the current patent situation is getting some real attention in the mainstream media. The following is a quote from a recent New York Times article. The Gates memo predicted that a large company would patent some obvious thing, and that's exactly what Verizon has done. Two of its patents cover the concept of translating phone numbers into internet addresses. It is virtually impossible to create a consumer-friendly internet telephone product without doing this. So if Verizon prevails on appeal, it will probably be able to drive Vonage out of business. Consumers will suffer from fewer choices and higher prices, and future competitors will be reluctant to enter markets dominated by patents. But don't software companies need patent protection? In fact, companies, especially those that are focused on innovation, don't. Software is already protected by copyright law, and there's no reason any industry needs both types of protection. The rules of copyright are simpler, and protection is available to everyone at a very low cost. In contrast, the patent system is cumbersome and expensive. Applying for patents and conducting patent searches can cost tens of thousands of dollars. This is not a huge burden for large companies like Microsoft, but it can be a serious burden for the small startup firms that produce some of the most important software innovations. Yet, as the Vonage case demonstrates, participating in the patent system is not optional. Independent invention is not a defense to patent infringement, and large software companies now hold so many patents that it's almost impossible to create useful software without infringing some of them. Therefore, the only means of self-defense is the one Mr. Gates identified 16 years ago: stockpile patents to use as bargaining chips in litigation. Vonage didn't do that, and now it's paying a very high price. Only patent lawyers benefit from this kind of arms race. And Microsoft's own history contradicts Mr. Smith's claim that patents are essential for technological breakthroughs. Microsoft produced lots of innovative software before it received its first software patent in 1988. As more and more lawsuits rock the industry, we should ask if software patents are stifling innovation. Bill Gates certainly thought so in 1991, even if he won't admit it today. End quote. And here's really hoping that some progress will finally be made on actually fixing the issue. I've noticed more and more it's getting attention in some mainstream type places like the New York Times, and there was actually something on it about CNN recently also. So now that this is getting into the mainstream spotlight, hopefully something can finally be done about it. The next story I have is Mobile is Dead, or The Flexibility of Linux. And this is from a recent blog post by the head of Nokia's open source software operations, and it's a great reminder as to just how flexible Linux really is. Quote, "Back in the good old days, we created mobile software from scratch. We created homegrown operating systems for mobile phones, mobile stacks and UI frameworks, primitive lightweight file systems, and so on. Back then, CPUs were lazy and flash was poor. Thus, we built dedicated software for mobile devices, and we called it mobile software. Today, we run Linux, X, GNOME, Flash, and all friends on Nokia's N800. Our big idea from the start was to run, as closely as possible, a desktop Linux stack. Others will start to do the same, and I predict that mobile software will thus eventually die. All we need is software that runs everywhere. End quote. And as he points out, the N800 is really a great example of this. For the most part, it runs a fairly stock Linux, and it's Debian-based, and if you've never seen an N800, it's a fantastic device, and one that I own and am thoroughly enjoying. But this fairly stock Linux is becoming the case even with things as small as mobile phones. It's just running Linux. And on the other end of the spectrum, we have mainframes that run just Linux as well. Now, sure, there are differences in kernel compilation options and a myriad of things. Obviously, mainframes are going to utilize something like NUMA, where on a mobile phone you're going to rip out almost everything and just use a minimal set of options, but it is still the main Linux kernel. So in the end, both truly are Linux. What's important is that that means you can use the same tools, the same developer knowledge, the whole same chain of things, and in many cases you can even use the same applications, whether it be a phone, a tablet, a desktop, or a server, it's just Linux. And that's a powerful, powerful proposition. And of course, OS X looks to be offering that same flexibility, which is no surprise as it's really just based on BSD. You know, it runs everything from the iPhone to the iMac to the MacBook Pros all the way up to their line of servers. It's all just OS X, which is all just really BSD. Now compare this paradigm to the Windows world. If you have a mobile or even a tablet, it may run Windows Mobile, but it might run Windows CE, and for desktops, you can choose between a couple of versions of XP or a myriad versions of Vista, and then for the server, you have Windows 2003, and most apps that work on XP will work on 2003 and probably even Vista, but I don't think there's any compatibility between Vista and mobile or even mobile and CE. That's kind of a confusing line, at least for me. I should probably look into it more, but Windows Mobile and Windows CE seem to be almost completely different operating systems, and it depends which phone you buy, which one you get. And also importantly, you have different tool sets and different tool chains for many of these, completely different kernels in some cases, and some really seem to have arbitrary limitations that I don't quite understand from a technical perspective. And whenever you draw lines from a marketing delineation, a lot of weird things happen. So behind the scenes, this all has to be a nightmare to manage, and I'd guess the duplication of effort is absolutely astounding. All that makes me glad that I run Linux on almost every device I own. The last story I have is Zandros signs up with Microsoft. So it looks like Zandros has signed a deal similar to the recent Microsoft Novell one, and this is from the official press release. Quote, today, Microsoft Corp. and Linux platform vendor Zandros Inc. announced a broad collaboration agreement based on a set of technical, business, marketing, and intellectual property commitments. These commitments provide customers with enhanced interoperability, more effective systems management solutions, and intellectual property assurances, all of which extend a bridge between open source and commercial software and deliver customers real value in mixed system environments. For Zandros, the agreement marks a major milestone in its vision of delivering end-to-end Linux desktop and server solutions, as well as Windows and Linux cross-platform management and interoperability tools. Companies today are running a mixture of Linux and Windows systems, said Andreas Tapalos, Chief Executive Officer of Zandros. Cross-platform data centers are a reality. To meet evolving customer needs, vendors need to recognize the value of sharing intellectual property, developing more interoperable solutions, and providing management tools that are familiar and easy to use. The press release then goes into a few of the things that will be offered, which are as follows. Quote, intellectual property assurance. Through the agreement, Microsoft will make available patent covenants for Zandros customers. These covenants will provide customers with confidence that the Zandros technologies they use and deploy in their environments are compliant with Microsoft's intellectual property. By putting a framework in place to share intellectual property, Zandros and Microsoft can speed the development of interoperable solutions. Microsoft Sales and Marketing Support. The companies are committing to a set of sales and marketing efforts to promote the output of their technical efforts. As part of the effort, Microsoft will now endorse Zandro Server and Desktop as a preferred Linux distribution due to Zandros' efforts to establish rich interoperability and deliver IP assurance to its customers. Also, a specialized team of Microsoft staff will be trained on the value proposition of this collaboration to customers and channel partners. Zandros will also become a member of the Microsoft Interop Vendor Alliance. End quote. Now, this story, I haven't been able to look into it quite as much as I wanted. It should be interesting to see how the community responds. I guess it's going to be a little bit different than the Novell case. Zandros hasn't exactly been able to get much traction in the marketplace, and this very well may have just been a move to kind of stay alive. Also, unlike the case of Novell, which has a huge amount of patents, and therefore they were able to kind of do a deal in both directions, I don't believe Zandros has any. So it's certainly not going to be as equitable of a thing from a patent perspective. I did notice that the CEO of Zandros already had to release a statement stating that he didn't think this meant that Linux infringed on Microsoft's IP. It seemed like a surprise to him that that's what people thought, even though the exact same thing happened with Novell. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I'd guess as this deal comes more out and we maybe see similar ones before the final release of GPL version 3, I'll have more comments and be able to get more information on that. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening.